안녕하세요, 여러분. The Happy Project Podcast에 오신 것을 환영합니다.
Becky, his name is Cedric Skysetti, and you are listening to yet another episode of the best podcast that you've heard today. I can't say of all time, but I realize that would just be too much to demand. But we're so glad that you're here today. And yes, Cooks, how are you?
I am doing quite well. Well,
you're kind of rocking back and forth a little bit.
Truth be told, I'm getting kind of sleepy as we're recording this at 7:50 p.m. Yeah. I mean, you know, the past couple of days I've had, my sleep schedule is a little off. And so it just kind of hit me in the past 20 minutes.
Like the last 30 seconds?
Yeah. So like, hopefully what comes out of my mouth today will make a lot of sense to everyone listening.
I'm trying to bring my head back to our topic, because we were just watching a couple movie trailers trying to decide what movie we want to watch later, and now I'm just thinking about all of that. So come on, Becky, drop back in. Well, today we are going to ask this hypothetical question that we will, you know, make our own educated guesses on, depending on what we know from history and what we know today about Korea. And of course, what we are saying is pure speculation, but we hope that we can add a little edge of possible realism just by the research that we have done. And it should be a fun conversation that we hope you guys will also join in, whether you've thought of this or not previously. But the question is, what will Korea look like in 10 years?
2031.
Ooh, 2031. Well, we decided to ask this question because, we speculate a lot, like, oh, if Korea, or if we left Korea and we returned, how quickly it might change. And honestly, it's a interesting concept, or interesting question to kind of bat your mind around, because Korea has changed very rapidly in a short period of time. I would say Korea is one of the countries in the world that developed in an incredible short amount of time. We had a professor over, the Joe who was over talking about how just 30, 40 years ago, was it about then, Korea was one of the poorest nations in the world.
Now it's 200 or 220.
Yeah. And now its GDP is one of the top 10 countries in the world, all within less than 50 years. That is an incredible jump. And so obviously many changes had to have happened within the country in order for that to be possible. Mm-hmm. And so we could see, even in our own time, even my own time here in Korea, hasn't even been 10 years, I have seen so much change happen that I personally don't feel like when I was growing up in the States. Sure, there are memories I have, like, oh, when I was 10 years old in the States versus 20 years old. Within 10 years, many things changed, but it was more like things changed to me in my life, not the whole nation as a whole. But here in Korea, it's just the years in such a short amount of time, so much volatile change happened that even I have seen it myself. And so what could Korea possibly look like in 10 more years? And we just wanted to speculate a little bit on that.
Yeah. Well, I think... obviously, well, it may not be obvious to everyone, but I think for a lot of people, they know that Korea has quite almost, it seems like literally has risen from the ashes of the Korean War. Mm-hmm. And then just fast forward maybe 3 decades, they got to a place that is sustainable. They're not the poorest in the world. Manufacturing and exports have picked up at this point by the 1980s. But I've heard it said, I forgot who said it or where I read it, but Korea sort of accomplished in 30 years what a country would normally accomplish in about 100. Mm. So the speed of growth of like rising from the ashes, so to speak. So just to kind of give a, you know, frame of reference, I mean, 30 years to go from one of the poorest to a sustainable, you know, just a, mm-hmm. I guess a decent level. I don't know where it was in the 1980s, but they definitely weren't where they were 20 years prior or mm-hmm. even 10 years prior. Mm-hmm. the speed of in which that has happened into where now you have Korea being one of the top countries in the world. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, some people would maybe speculate that at a certain point, once you reach the pinnacle or the top, you sort of plateau, or like your growth slows, you know? Now, would that be the case for Korea? I don't know. Yeah. I mean, because you have different things that come into play. Like, a couple of decades ago, right? You have Korea really just having a, what do you call it? Like a top-down approach to...
The policy changes, like this kind of thing?
Well, policy changes, yes, but also just in the economy, right? In the hierarchy and the structure and how businesses are ran, right? So, oh my gosh, what is the
word? What are you talking about?
What is the word?
I don't know what you're talking about. Chaebol? Are you talking about?
I mean, yeah, that's included, but like...
Economic?
Yeah.
Trickle-down economics?
See, this is where the sleepiness is coming in. What is the opposite of communism?
Democracy? What are you trying to... I don't understand what you're trying to
capitalism.
Say.
Capitalism.
Oh!
Top-down capitalism.
Yeah, my bad.
Oh, man. Yeah, so... Yeah. Okay, get it together, Sid. Wow. Capitalism. Yeah, so Korea has adopted a capitalist... South Korea, that is, has adopted capitalism, but it's very different from what we know in the West, right? In, say, in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so Korea was built on this top-down capitalism where you had, like, the Jaebols, like, the top... like the most powerful monopolies basically of Korea, like the family-owned sort of dynasties economically sort of building up the country, right? So you had that sort of approach to growing Korea in such a short amount of time, and then you have like the Samsungs, you have the Hyundais, and you have these big companies that have become global successes, and that is what has driven the society and the country and the growth, right? But I wonder how it's going to... I mean, because they're still in power today, right? They're still the top companies in Korea today. Mm-hmm. So in 10 years, which is not a long time, I would imagine they're still on top, but I don't know how much more growth they could really forge.
That's a good point.
You know? Yeah. I do feel like Korea will advance most definitely and try to maintain its position as a global leader in, you know, things like technology and, you know, other industries, but I don't know how much more they can grow.
Yes.
I think the growth speed will be far different than, say, from post-Korean War to the 1980s. Mm-hmm. I think the speed will be a lot different.
Okay. That was really great because it just draw me to mind because I was recently doing some research of like, where are the most friendly expat countries to live, right? Mm-hmm. Which countries do expats feel like they could settle in and feel like they make a proper career and feel belonging? Unfortunately, South Korea has dropped dramatically within the past only couple of years of being one of the most expat-friendly, welcoming to new businesses, entrepreneurial spirit countries, and now has dropped a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think if it continues the trend of right now with the government, the way that things are going in some ways, that we will be losing many of these young entrepreneurs or people who are coming from other countries, bringing new ideas, new concepts, diversification of businesses in Korea. If it's not friendly or open to entrepreneurs, then what I do think that there is going to be a certain loss in business status and competitiveness, at least globally speaking.
Yeah.
So this was an article that had just come out very, very recently where it was mentioning like, okay, Korea, I mean, if you want to have a competitive edge, right now, you obviously do, but it is thanks to companies like Samsung. It is thanks to Hyundai, these chaebols, right? These monopolies. But if you really want to continue to push forward and have that edge, you're going to have to encourage this entrepreneurial spirit, which I think doesn't innately exist in Korea and the education system.
Right. And so kind of going back to what I said and to your point, like, you have Korea that was built on a top-down approach, and it worked because Korea naturally is a very hierarchical society, right? So you have your place. I mean, it's sort of a glorified caste system, if you will, you know. And I mean, not as intense, but like, you know, there's levels, right? And you know your place, and you respect the place that's above you. And so Korea was sort of built off of this, but what I'm starting to find is like these days, people are I think a lot of Korean people are just wanting, and younger people mm-hmm. especially are wanting more of a, I don't want to use the word Western style, but wanting more of a, less of that control or the feeling of hierarchy and more of a collaborative or like, you know, just being, you know, just like, for example, like the US, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to be respected for who they are, not having to just work and slave at a company and just, you know, do what your boss says, even though your boss is an idiot, right? So like, like, I feel like the younger people, they're sort of trapped in the system. They can't, you know, they have to play the game. But I think deep down inside, they're like, there's got to be another way. And that proves your point about, you know, maybe like entrepreneurs starting, like, it, Korea is yet to, I mean, I think it's moving forward in that, but Korea is yet to really be like an entrepreneur driven or welcoming society as a whole.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you fast forward 10 years, my guess is I feel like Korea will begin to adapt more of an entrepreneurial type of framework in the economy. But, you know, I don't know. 10 years is...
It's hard to say at this point. There doesn't seem to be a very clear direction which path.
Right. I mean, because you have like the Seoul Startup Center, which actually provides a lot of support for startups, right? Or the Seoul Global Center. And there's like funding that is provided for a lot of startups. So I feel like Korea is starting to do that.
Yeah.
I just think it just needs to catch up. Mm-hmm. As with many things, because Korea, again, grew so fast that I think a lot of things were sort of either slipped through the cracks or like it's just dragging behind. And I think Korea is just catching up.
Yeah.
So I respect that. But man, there's just, you see the difference between the generations, the older generation who is more used to like that hierarchical, like this is how it is, top-down approach versus the younger generation that wants more creativity, wants more freedom, has access to the internet, knows how things are, you know, maybe in the States and like, well, you know, why can't it be like this here?
That's right.
You know, so I think there's more of an awakening because of the access to resources and information.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Korea will try to make a push to transition to that, but I think it's going to have to, I don't think the old people up top are gonna like be like, okay, let's change.
Right.
I think it's gonna come from the younger ones from the bottom.
Yeah.
So I said all that to say, I do suspect that there will be, on one hand, I think there will be more entrepreneurship starting to flourish, or not flourish per se, but like being started or implemented. But I feel like it's gonna be a lot of pushback. And to your point with that article, I think there's already like, just like loss of hope in that area for a lot of people, you know? So I think there's going to, I could see it playing out in two ways. Like Korea is just going to lose its steam and, you know, at a cost, you know, lose their place in the economy and the economy is just going to get weaker or Korea be like, well, we should probably like
gotta pivot.
Yeah. We should probably pivot and it'll be best for the society. So that was a convoluted way of saying, I don't know. I can see it going both ways.
Right.
And I think if I had to choose a side of where I think Korea would be, I think it will support the entrepreneurship eventually because Korea is just going to catch up in that area because in many ways have implemented like more of a Western approach to business just in a Koreanized way. So I think it will eventually head in that direction because how long can Samsung and LG be on top and continue to run everything? For right now, it seems like, you know, they will, but...
But will the playing field get leveled out?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah.
Because Samsung didn't think about, you know, starting a home delivery type of service, but Coupon came in.
That's
and actually
true.
The CEO, he came from, I believe, the States, right? I believe the CEO was either Korean American or he studied in the States and got his, you know, education there, at least his post education, and came back, started the company.
Yeah.
And that was a startup, of course, in the beginning. So yeah, there might be more companies like that in the future, you know, that will see a need in the marketplace and sort of rise up.
Kind of going hand in hand with saying, this new startup that has now taken over in Korean business, Coupang, the founder or whoever had the idea, perhaps got this idea from the States. I want to talk about education now. what might Korea's education look like in 10 years? So when I think back to even just, you know, just 10 years ago, people who went to high school with me, a lot of times parents believed or pushed really hard to get their kids to study abroad, study in the U.S., study in New Zealand, study in Australia, but U.S. especially. Why? Because of the reputation. Get the good school reputation so that you can take that, come back to Korea, and you can get a good job. Or you fight really hard to get your visa in the U.S. so that you can have a good career there. We know that Korea is highly educated. Korea has one of the highest literacy rates in the world. Mm-hmm. Very educated country overall. And education is very, very highly prized. But we have seen now that there's almost a saturation of it. People who are even my age have gone to get their master's degree, who are now going back to university to get another degree, who right. are getting another certification, just in order to hold down an ordinary job, nothing that even has to do with their degree, right? And people study really hard for years to get into these top schools, Seoul National University, Yonsei, right? Goryeodae. But is that adding any additional benefit to people's life, especially when they think, I got to make the right career so that I can make a family and buy a mm-hmm. house when the housing prices rise, et cetera. So education seems to be at the forefront of many younger people's lives before. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like it's changed a bit, almost like, people ask me more, what is your dream? And they try to talk about this to younger kids. Mm. What is your dream? Not what do you want to study? What university are you trying to get into? And I feel like the conversation is changing just a little bit. And I also feel like people who have gone through the system now feel like, what was that benefiting me?
Right.
You know? Additionally, people who studied in the US, what happened? A lot of times come back to Korea and then, you know, try to work here. I think the education system at some point is going to change. And it's probably has to change if we want to benefit the next generation. And it's because our generation who went through that education system now has the power to change it or speak up about it. Because the conversation, everyone I talk to who has been through the education system in Korea always says, yeah, something has to change. Mm, we're going to have right. to, you know, it's got to change somehow because it hasn't yet. Maybe, of course, not in all cases, but hasn't yet really propelled people now in our age group to the success that it should have mm-hmm. by going to school. So I think the education system will change. Exactly how it will change, I'm not sure. But my guess is there will be some form of reformation in the schooling system.
Wow, yeah, that's a big statement. I mean, 10 years, right?
I mean, there's many more like Montessori style schools. I know some girl who works at a school where they tailor the curriculum towards the student's interests, wow. which you never would have heard of before.
Mm-hmm. But like, I wonder how that, and just speaking in present day times, like a school like that, how that would, I guess, prep people for or prep students for like college entrance mm-hmm. and like the sinung and
yeah. Well, that would have to change too.
Right, right. And you know, I'm trying not to put my opinion in this, mm-hmm. But it's just I think reformation will eventually have to happen. But again, I think everything seems to boil down to the passing of the torch mm-hmm. and the transfer of power. Mm-hmm. And it's like, eventually the current generation that's sort of running everything has to let's keep it real. They're going to eventually die. Right. and it's going to have to go to someone else. But like, yeah. The generation that is passed to has to be the generation that causes that transition to happen, mm-hmm. or they're just going to do things how it's always been done.
Yeah.
So I think it just really boils when it comes to education and how business is done, and I think it in politics even, mm-hmm. man, there's gonna have to be some sort of like intentional shifting and pivoting, and I don't know how possible that is because I feel like it's gonna be like a lot of backlash for someone who might try to mm-hmm. to do something so drastic.
Mm-hmm. There may be. And the other question too is there a feeling of empowerment that does exist in our generation to make those changes, mm-hmm. to be able to speak up? And as of yet, I do not see within our generation, like, you know, that voice, that stand yeah. up that demands change or really fights or advocates for something to change like that. I mean, perfect example of how society will still crush those voices down for very needed changes was the Me Too movement in Korea. Mm. How differently people reacted to the Me Too movement in Korea versus in the US. Perhaps in the US, people actually lost their jobs over this. Perhaps, you know, people, of course, the fight is still going on. But I feel like there were some more positive changes that happened and voices were heard more. But in Korea, the Me Too movement kind of became a joke. You know, in some places, yeah, some actors, okay, got fired, okay, some director, whatever. But in a lot of times, the women's voices were really pushed down. Mm-hmm. Some people, they were very oppressed. And if you did speak about it, even in your office or whatever, people were like, oh, yeah, haha, me too, hashtag me too. Like, it was kind of caution. Like, don't talk about it openly. The patriarchy system still exists to that extent that these voices demanding change were pushed down. And so the question with any of these things in 10 years, will there be enough voices demanding change that change can actually happen? And I'm of two minds. Mm-hmm. One mind is like, yeah, well, look at what happens when people try to stand. The system pushes you down. That's one thing. But the second thing I have to say in favor of change, the possibility of it, is how Korea, through its whole history, has always changed from the bottom up. Mm. We see the people having demonstrations. We saw people standing up to these regimes, the people fighting against Japanese oppression. And in the end, the regimes were toppled. The oppression was passed. The democracy was won. And it is the people who finally stood up to that changes and demanded those changes. And they did happen. And in very short periods of time. So I do wonder, of course, it might not be as dramatic changing education as fighting a dictatorship. But I do wonder, will there be a point where that spirit of demonstration that exists at the heart of Korean politics and society, will finally that happen? And will there be some change? Right. I have to wonder. But again, this is all speculation, guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. So, I mean, you would have to need like a large amount of people to
really care.
Yeah. And to rise up and to say, you know what, enough is enough. Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to stand for. And yeah, I mean, that could be the beginnings. But as far as education, I haven't, you know, not that I'm aware of, I mm-hmm. haven't seen anyone on a grand scale rise up.
Right.
You know, and demand change.
Right.
And what, you know, I just think when it comes to certain changes when it's ingrained into the system, right? Like Korean customs and like the hierarchy structure and the patriarchal nature is in this, it's just in the lifeblood mm-hmm. of the society. I feel like those are the things that are going to take probably generations to really fully sure. change and switch. So I don't know.
Oh, sorry, not to interrupt.
No. I was going to say, will it be the babies that are being born today, that generation that starts to really see the benefits of, you know, the change that we're talking about today?
Korea for sure is going to look more diverse
mm-hmm.
within 10 years, right? We already are an example of that. But in my 10 years, I've seen from when I first came to Korea, let's say when I was 16 years old, that I can remember, the only black person I saw was on the military base. And I right. distinctly remember the moment when we were led on the military base through my emo's friend who lived on the base, and we were driving in. And that was the first time I saw a black person in 3 months. And he was this really big guy, and he was actually very scary because he was a big soldier. And we drove in, and my emo didn't know how to drive, so she drove right past the stop sign. Uh-huh. And he was like, stop that car! And she had no idea what he was saying because she didn't speak English. And I was like, oh, emo, don't drive anymore. He's coming at us. And then he was like, ma'am, do you have a license? And she was like, but that was the first. I was smiling in the back seat because I was like, oh, hey, non-Korean mm-hmm. guy, first one. When I was 16, it stood out that much. Now, fast forward these 10 years, how much more diverse Seoul, at least, has become. And it will only continue to become more diverse.
Yeah.
And because that is inevitable, then the laws and education system and the way we are taught to deal with people and the way society interacts and works and language, it has to change. So I will say directly because of this diversification that is happening within the population, then the country and the way the system is run will inevitably change in 10 years. Now, whether it will change because the uppers see it's necessary for a happy, wholesome society, or whether the people is going to have to fight for that, that remains to be seen, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I actually agree with you. I think a lot of the changes will come from the new marriages, international marriages here, and people coming here to work. That's considering that over the next few years, the trend continues. And because COVID is changing mm-hmm. so much, right? Yeah. So we don't know what's going to really happen with that. But considering the trend of foreigners coming, moving here continues to increase.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's a correlation with that and, you know, the new marriages and families. Mm-hmm. And also another thing to think about is because of the declining birth rate and marriage rate.
Yes.
Here in Korea, year after year, I think that can also spark the conversation of just, I don't know, allowing more rights and freedoms and just more open arms for foreigners coming mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. because they're ready for their opas and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas like the native Korean girls here, like, man, forget that. I'm mm-hmm. on my own, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, I think that can play a part in bringing forth some of these changes when it comes to diversity and, just providing a place for even foreigners to come live
mm-hmm.
and work.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's just one last topic, which I think is vital to touch on. And again, this is, as we don't know the inner workings of what the government's talking about, this kind of thing, but from what we can speculate, unification is a very big one. In my opinion, if the two Koreas do not unify within a short period of time, mm-hmm. and maybe this is within 10 years, I don't think it will ever happen.
Mm.
I think North Korea and South Korea, as time goes, the blood bond that we feel between the two peoples, the North people and the South people, weakens. It is not my brother is living across the border and I have to be reunited with him. Slowly over time, it becomes, well, we were once one nation and we should get back together. But the bond is not so strong or emotional as it was before.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, as time goes, it's just that the countries are so different. The economic standing is so different. The feeling of responsibility South Korea may feel towards the North Korean people, it changes with the next generations. What we know, what we care about. And then we have to ask, say there is unification. I think there's probably just honestly three possible paths. One, no unification, just two separate countries and that's just how it is. And the war ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two, there is going to be a dramatic unification, whether this means some kind of attack. Whether this means, you know, taking over North Korea, whatever, however that looks. And that would be very devastating for both North and South Korea. So if that happens within 10 years, then we have a huge economic fall that's going to happen, fallout. And it's going to take a lot of time to build back up. But ultimately, I think could become a richer nation than ever before, having the two countries. Or three, there will be a peaceful reunification. But even in the case of the last two, the people's minds and cultures
mm-hmm.
and history within this past 50 years is so incredibly different. Will this idea, this long-standing idea of same blood, will that be strong enough to bring us together? So if unification does happen within the 10 years, we're in for a rough time because I don't think South Korea is prepared to absorb and embrace our northern, you know, brothers and sisters. And there's going to be a lot of conflict that happens, a lot of heartache and a lot of economic struggles. But if it does happen, my positive premonition is that maybe perhaps in 15 years, Korea as one nation will be even stronger and better than ever. But I think the window of possible unification is shrinking. And this is just my analysis.
Wow, you put it so well.
I've thought about this for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much that I want to offer on top of that because, it makes sense and I think I'm with you. I just, you know, I remember watching a couple of videos in the past couple of years, just here and there about, for example, there's this one channel that does a lot of street interviews and mm-hmm. they're interviewing the older generation, younger generation of South Koreans, hey, how do you feel about unification? And as you would probably, you know, imagine, the older ones, there was a higher percentage of them that said, you know, they're open to it. Mm-hmm. Some of them really want it. Mm-hmm. Some of them are just like, oh, yeah, it would be good. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't like, oh, we should do it, right? Yeah. And then most of the younger ones are like, I don't see how it's going to really work. Or, mm-hmm. you know, I don't see at this point, you know, why. Because yeah. South Korea would, you know, at least the southern part would have to absorb a lot of, you know, I guess the
fallout.
Yeah, the fallout and how much it would cost to really just reshift how society is ran. Mm-hmm. And then you have to work with like the North and mm-hmm. their ideology and like who's going to be the big dog. You know, South Korea is not going to let the North obviously be on top, so mm-hmm, to speak. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think the point is, I think a lot of younger people who don't have that connection, that affinity, like their, you know, parents and especially their grandparents, mm-hmm. they're just like, we're living our own life. We're fine. You know, there's no need to try to, shake the boat, rot the boat.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It is an interesting, standstill that we are at, because technically we're still at war, but how long can we continue as we are now?
Yeah.
So something will have to change. And just my prediction is within the 10 years, we will see one shift one way or the other. Mm. That is what I have to say. But again, I'm not like a, you know, political science person. This is just my own research and thoughts. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Cooks? Is that it?
That was it. Very, very interesting.
That was fun. That was a lot more in depth than I expected
right?
us to go.
We're going to be like, oh, so K-pop's going to be on top in 10 years.
Right. Yeah. But that was really fun. And since I said that was really fun, I guess we're going to wrap it up here. So thanks so much for listening to this episode. And if you've got your own comments or you got something that you want to share or your own prediction, what's Korea going to look like in 10 years? Whatever you're imagining, you can just send it to us in an email at thehalfwayproject@gmail.com. And we'd love to chat with you about that as well. And make sure to subscribe, listen to this podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and share this with anyone that you think might be interested. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. We are The Halfway Project.